Chapter 2. When Our Spaceship Landed on Earth. Jules Verne, the grandfather of all science fiction novelists, has become an accepted writer. His fantasies are no longer science fiction, and the astronauts of our day travel around the world in 86 minutes, not 80 days. We are now going to describe what might happen on an imaginary journey by spaceship. Yet this imaginary journey will become possible in fewer decades than the time it took to contract Jules Verne's crazy notion of a journey around the world in 80 days to a lightning journey of 86 minutes. But let us not think in terms of such short periods of time. Let us assume that our spaceship will leave the Earth for an unknown distant sun in 150 years' time. The spaceship would be as big as a present-day ocean liner, and would therefore have a launching weight of about 100,000 tons with a fuel load of 99,800 tons, that is, an effective payload of 200 tons. Impossible? Already we could assemble a spaceship piece by piece while in orbit around a planet. Yet even this assembly work will become unnecessary in less than two decades because it will be possible to prepare the giant spaceship for launching on the moon. Besides, the basic research for the rocket propulsion of tomorrow is in full swing. Future rocket motors will mainly be powered by nuclear fusion and travel at nearly the speed of light. A bold new method, the feasibility of which has already been shown by physical experiments on individual elementary particles, will be the photon rocket. The fuel carried on board the photon rocket enables the rocket's velocity to approach so close to the speed of light that the effects of relativity, especially the variation in time between the launching site and spaceship, can operate to the full. The fuel supplies will be transformed into electromagnetic radiation and ejected as a clustered propulsive jet with the speed of light. Theoretically, a spaceship equipped with photon propulsion can reach 99% of the speed of light. At this speed, the boundaries of our solar system would be blasted open. An idea that really makes the mind reel. But we, who are on the threshold of a new age, should remember that the giant strides in technology which our grandfathers experienced were just as staggering in their day. The railways, electricity, telegraphy, the first car, the first airplane. We ourselves heard music in the air for the first time. We see color TV. We saw the first launching of spaceships and American astronauts actually walking on the moon. And we get news and pictures from satellites that revolve around the Earth. Our children's children will go on interstellar journeys and carry out cosmic research in the universities. Let us follow the journey of our imaginary spaceship, whose goal is a distant fixed star. It would certainly be amusing to try to imagine what the crew of the spaceship did to kill time on their journey, because however vast the distances they covered, and however slowly time might crawl along for those left behind on Earth, Einstein's theory of relativity still holds good. It may sound incredible, but time on board the spaceship, traveling barely below the speed of light, actually passes more slowly than on the Earth. For example, only 10 years pass for our crew on their flight in the universe, whereas 108 years go by for those who stay at home. This shift in time between the space travelers and the people on Earth can be calculated by the basic rocket equation worked out by Professor Ackerett. At the moment, when our spaceship is approaching the star, which is its target, the crew will undoubtedly examine planets, fix their position, undertake spectral analyses, measure forces of gravity, and calculate orbits. Lastly, they will choose as a landing place the planet whose conditions come closest to those of our Earth. If our spaceship consists solely of its payload after a journey of, shall we say, 80 light years, because all the energy supplies have been used up, the crew will have to replenish the tanks of their spacecraft with fissionable material at their goal. Let us assume, then, that the planet chosen to land on is similar to the Earth. I have already said that this assumption is by no means impossible. Let us also venture the supposition that the civilization of the planet visited is in about the same state of development as the Earth was 8,000 years ago. Of course, this would all have been confirmed by the instruments on board the spaceship long before the landing. Naturally, our space travelers have also picked on a landing site that lies close to a supply of fissionable matter. Their instruments show quickly and reliably in which mountain ranges uranium can be found. The landing is carried out according to plan. Our space travelers see beings making stone tools. They see them hunting and killing game by throwing spears. Flocks of sheep and goats are grazing on the steppe. Primitive potters are making simple household utensils. A strange sight to greet our astronauts. But what do the primitive beings on this planet think about the monstrosity that has just landed there and the figures that climbed out of it? Let us not forget that we too were semi-savages 8,000 years ago. So it is not surprising when the semi-savages who experienced this event bury their faces in the ground and dare not raise their eyes. Until this day, they have worshipped the sun and the moon, and now something earth-shaking has happened. The gods have come down from heaven. From a safe hiding place, the inhabitants of the planet watch our space travelers, who wear strange hats with rods on their heads, helmets with antennae. They are amazed when the night is made bright as day. Searchlights. They are terrified when the strangers rise effortlessly into the air. Rocket belts. They bury their heads in the ground again when weird unknown animals soar in the air, droning, buzzing, and snorting. Helicopters, all-purpose vehicles. And lastly, they take flight to the safe refuge of their caves when a frightening boom and rumble resounds from the mountains. A trial explosion. Undoubtedly, our astronauts must seem like almighty gods to these primitive people. Day by day, the space travelers continue their laborious work, and after some time, a delegation of priests or medicine men will probably approach the astronauts in order to make contact with the gods. They bring gifts to pay homage to their guests. It is conceivable that our spacemen will rapidly learn the language of the inhabitants with the help of a computer, and can thank them for the courtesy shown. Yet although they can explain to the savages in their own language that no gods have landed, that no higher beings worthy of adoration have paid a visit, it has no effect. Our primitive friends simply do not believe it. The space travelers came from other stars. They obviously have tremendous power and the ability to perform miracles. They must be gods. There is also no point in the spacemen's trying to explain any help they may offer. It is all far beyond the comprehension of these people who have been so terrifyingly invaded. Although it is impossible to imagine all the things that might take place from the day of landing onward, the following points might well figure on a preconceived plan. Part of the population would be won over and trained to help search a crater formed by an explosion for fissionable matter needed for the return to Earth. The most intelligent of the inhabitants would be elected king. As a visible sign of his power, he would be given a radio set through which he could contact and address the gods at any time. Our astronauts would try to teach the natives the simplest forms of civilization and some moral concepts in order to make the development of a social order possible. A few specially selected women would be fertilized by the astronauts. Thus, a new race would arise that skipped a stage in natural evolution. We know from our own development how long it would take before this new race became space experts. Consequently, before the astronauts began their return flight to Earth, they would leave behind clear and visible signs which only a highly technical, mathematically based society would be able to understand much, much later. Any attempt to warn our protégés of dangers in store would have little chance of success. Even if we show them the most horrifying films of terrestrial wars and atomic explosions, it would not prevent the beings living on this planet from committing the same follies any more than it now stops, almost, the whole of sentient humanity from constantly playing with the burning flame of war. While our spaceship disappears again into the mists of the universe, our friends will talk about the miracle. The gods were here. They will translate it into their simple language and turn it into a saga to be handed down to their sons and daughters. They will turn the presents and implements and everything that the space travelers left behind into holy relics. If our friends have mastered writing, they may make a record of what happened. Uncanny, weird, miraculous. Then their texts will relate, and drawings will show, that gods in golden clothes were there in a flying boat that landed with a tremendous din. They will write about chariots which the gods drove over land and sea, and of terrifying weapons that were like lightning, and they will recount that the gods promised to return. They will hammer and chisel in the rock pictures of what they had once seen, shapeless giants with helmets and rods on their heads, carrying boxes in front of their chests, balls on which indefinable beings sit and ride through the air, staves from which rays are shot out, as if from a sun, strange shapes resembling giant insects, which were vehicles of some sort. There are no limits to the fantasy of the illustrations that result from the visit of our spaceship. We shall see later what traces the gods who visited the Earth in our remote antiquity engraved on the tablets of the past. It is quite easy to sketch the subsequent development of the planet that our spaceship visited. The inhabitants have learned a lot by watching the gods surreptitiously. The place on which the spaceship stood will be declared holy ground, a place of pilgrimage where the heroic deeds of the gods will be praised in song. Pyramids and temples will be built on it, in accordance with astronomic laws, of course. The population increases, wars devastate the place of the gods, and then come generations who rediscover and excavate the holy places and try to interpret the signs. This is the stage we have reached. Now that we have landed men on the moon, we can open our minds to space travel. We know the effect the sudden arrival of a large ocean-going sailing vessel had on primitive people in, for example, the South Sea Islands. We know the devastating effect a man like Cortez from another civilization had on South America. So then we can appreciate, if only dimly, the fantastic impact the arrival of spacecraft would have made in prehistoric times. We must now take another look at the forest of question marks, the array of unexplained mysteries. Do they make sense as the remains of prehistoric space travelers? Do they lead us into our past and yet link up with our plans for the future?